Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for UFC Vegas 26, Rodriguez versus Waterson, with your hosts, TV Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru, back once again for a interestingly put together card, some would say at the last minute, Rodriguez Waterson. UFC Vegas 26, UFC on ESPN 24, going to be on ESPN Plus for this card. Donald Cerrone taking on Alex Morono in the co-main event, filling in for the recently released Diego Sanchez. Fight I'm most looking forward to would probably be either Neil Magny versus Jeff Neal, the Battle of the Neals, or Diego Fajera versus Gregor Gillespie. I mean, those are some awesome fights.
Yeah, this is going to be a hell of a card as far as entertainment value goes. As far as the names go, maybe not too much here. And some of the names we do know have not made their best impressions in the UFC so far. But I think it can make for a fun night of fights.
Yeah, I mean, when you have Maurice the Crochet Boss Green and Rodrigo de Lima on your main card, you know that it's a tough night on some level.
Yeah. So like you said, it got put together a little last minute. We're sitting here this weekend talking about how there's nothing posted on UFC stats or ESPN Fight Center besides Tefan the Don Chukwi and versus Jung Young Park. And we're sitting here trying to figure out, all right, so how are we going to get down to scouting this week if we don't really have, anything solid besides Tapology out there? And it's certainly helpful, but, it's a little difficult when you're trying to pore over the stats. So there's definitely a few fights on here that, we probably won't spend too much time on, but we do have a few interesting insights up and down the cards, so I don't want to skip over too much. But, yeah, I'd say let's get right down into breaking this down.
100%. No time to dilly-dally.
To start off the card, we have what's probably sure to be an exciting fight, Christian Aguilera versus Carlston Harris. Aguilera is going to be a good amount shorter, looking about 3 inches shorter, but I don't have any height or, any reach or leg reach on Harris. He's going to be 4 years older than Aguilera. So I'll definitely be looking at the face-offs for this fight. Just kind of looking into the backgrounds, Harris has, it seems like a grappling-heavy background. He beat Michel Pereira in the past. So that's, something on his resume that was all the way back in 2015. But Aguilera, he comes into the UFC, starches Anthony Ivey in the first round in his debut. Very impressive. And Brady, was able to submit him in the second round.
Can't knock a loss to Sean Brady, who's an unbelievable up-and-comer out of Philly.
Definitely. So you see, that was his first career submission loss. And it'll be a little difficult for Harris to get this BJJ brown belt out of there, especially if you're not quite on the level of a Brady, where it took him, into the second round to really make it happen. So me, I don't know about this.
Yeah, listen, I think that there might be a small recency bias with Aguilera, because I mean, I feel like this fight should be like even money. I know that there's probably going to be an interesting size discrepancy, like you said. So I'm really interested to see what weigh-ins look like. But there is something about Aguilera at a significant dog odd that is interesting. At least in my degenerate head, I don't think that this is a fight that I want to play. The first thing that did maybe come to my head, if I really was going to place a bet, would be the fight not to go the distance or like a round prop. But I mean, they're seeing that fight not to go the distance is -144. The under over at 2.5 is +116, -148. And the over under at 1.5 is -177 over. And +130 under 1.5. I mean, it's really dicey. Like they think it'll go over 1.5, but it probably won't go over 2.5. So,
It's tough. I mean, all the props are priced like they really don't know what's going to happen, because Harris by sub is +250, but by decisions +280, and then Aguilera KO is +300. So everything's kind of right all around there. And yeah, this is just a fight I'm not going to touch. And if you had to ask me who I was going to take to win, go ahead and take the newcomer. I think they're trying to give him a decent opponent here, but this isn't something I'm going to be trusting with my money.
No, I think that's fair. If I had to give a specific play, I think it's the fight doesn't go the distance and you pay the chalk. But I'm not sure who I'm picking at this point. It will be way independent. I just want to see how they look, especially with a debut fighter who I don't really know how he looks.
Bring us right along to our next fight. This one, I feel like I do have a pretty solid play on. We have Tefan Chukwi versus Jun Young Park. This fight will be taking place at the middleweight division. Chukwi coming in minus 132 and Park at plus 106. I feel like the line opened up a little bit wider here and we've seen some money come in on Park. So I think looking at this fight, I definitely was more impressed with Tefan Chukwi in the stand-up. And I think he is extremely strong and going to be difficult to grapple. In Park's last win against Sean Phillips, you know, we saw that he was facing a guy that really can't face a grappler at this point, but the more impressive victory on his resume would be Marc-Andre Barrio back in 2019, not at the best stage of his career.
Yeah, Tefan certainly looks like the more powerful, more explosive fighter, certainly has the higher upside. I think it's fairly obvious that the UFC likes Tefan, would want to give him a relatively favorable matchup. I do hate when I say that, but...
Yeah, but yeah, coming out of Team Lloyd Irvin. Now, Chukwi comes in 2 inches height advantage and a 4-inch reach advantage. So to go along with that strength advantage, Park is going to be fighting an uphill battle just from a physical standpoint. And to see that his loss in the UFC was to Anthony Hernandez by round 2 submission, you know that he's not beyond, you know, being, you know, reversed in the grappling or punished in the stand-up to get to that point. So I really feel like Nchukwi at minus 132, everyone's looking for a reason to fade him. Park looked really good against a very low-level grappling opponent last time out and just completely dominated in the grappling. I think Nchukwi is going to put up a tougher fight. He's going to be part of a parlay for me at minus 132.
Yeah, I was going to say the Tefan money line is probably the play up until a point that you could even maybe use him as a parlay piece. I think I do like him as a parlay piece.
I mean, you could really just play him straight up, especially at that price. I mean, he might just be a big straight play for
Minus 132. Yeah, it's not a terrible money line. And then the Tefan KO plus 220. I don't think that's too bad.
That's not. And right now, DraftKings is plus 200. So there's definitely a discrepancy. And it seems like, if anything, that line might come down on FanDuel. So let's get right along. We have another... you know, probably a little bit of a lower level fight here. Ryan Benoit versus
get out your saltines.
Yeah, so you know, 3-3 career MMA record for Zaruk Adashev. He has a, you know, expansive background, 16-3 as a kickboxer. However,
Ryan Benoit is struggling to stay above 500 at 10-7.
Yeah, 3-5 in the UFC. The guys that he's lost to, Alatang Haley, not the most impressive name, but Tim Elliott, Brandon Moreno, and Ben Nguyen. Those are definitely guys that can put the pace on, especially 125. And, you know, Benoit probably has faced, you know, some tough competition. He's taking care of the lower level guys, even knocking out Sergio Pettis. He's got 2 knockouts in the UFC, 8 knockouts, 1 submission, 1 decision in his career.
He got a decision loss. I'm looking at that. A decision loss in 2013 to Anthony Burchak, who we know is just oof.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't look good.
He is the same height as Adashev on paper here. That's not been the case for Adashev recently. He is still giving up 3 inches of reach, but you remember watching him against Sumedeji, and that was a very interesting matchup as far as you know, height and reach go.
Oh yeah, that was crazy fight. Almost as crazy as the William Knight and Dong Jung fight.
Yeah, and you know, you saw Adashev able to kind of turn it around in round 2 and put on a better showing, but he definitely lost the decision. I thought he was live to make it the distance that fight just because of how bad he looked in his first appearance. And as long as he shows up well to the scale, I could see him going a decision again here. However, Benoit has some power in his hands. So I'm not rushing to place a prop on this one, especially Benoit at minus 155. That's very affordable. And if it comes down at all, it might be another solo play.
But, yeah, Benoit at Moneyline does seem interesting. It seems impossible to be on Adashev on any type of level. I'm even worried about Adashev in terms of weigh-ins. He's never looked good at a weigh-in. So following along that same line of thinking, I do want to take it a little bit one step further. I do like Benoit. I do think that he could maybe be a straight-up play or even a parlay piece with Nchukwe. I like the fight to go the distance. We saw Sumedarji, who has ridiculous power, unable to finish Zarouk. And Tyson Nam just landed that perfect shot. And he was so emotional. I believe that was his first finish in the UFC. So that was like just a big moment for him. So I don't think that Benoit gets the job done in terms of a finish, but I do think that he's the better fighter. Should be slightly bigger, more skilled, has more experience. So I think Benoit by decision at plus 170 is titillating enough for me.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Adashev also missed weight in his first fight, so that could have contributed to the chin. So, I agree with you. I see it much more likely that this could go to decision, especially that they're not especially high output, and Benoit might find it better to work some of the ground game here with his wrestling background. So,
we know that the flyweight division, I mean, unless you're Davidson Figueiredo, there's not a lot of finishes.
Yeah, and thankfully these lines were a little bit closer, you know, not so wide, so it's a little easier to swallow a straight play.
Speaking of a wide line.
Yeah, so getting to our next fight, someone that, you know, I'm really interested in playing, but as we said, a really wide line. We have Ludovic Klein coming in against Michael Trezano, minus 250 for Klein, Trezano plus 195. The line's a little bit prohibitive, but from the bit of tape that I was able to get into, I didn't really like Trezano keeping his hands low. I think he has good leg kicks. He's able to get in on the wrestling. He's able to hold up well and mix in his all-around game. But Klein, to me, has some elite skills. The way he chains together his body kicks and then sets that up for the head kick. He did that beautifully against Young. He also had a straight head kick knockout before making his UFC debut, like right before. 17-2, his two losses were one knockout, one submission. So that's something to keep an eye on. Those are back in 2017. But he's got elite hand speed and great range management. So, you know, I know he's a little shorter, 4 inches shorter, but he's got a 2.5-inch reach advantage. And he's 3 years younger.
So here's the thing. Klein gives you a lot to be excited about. And I think you laid it out beautifully. And his performance in the UFC, his debut performance in the UFC, I also think laid it out perfectly. How high his ceiling can go. I mean, we know that Shane Young is a tough son of a gun. And just the way that he knocked him out with the head kick and punches. I mean, just it wasn't lucky. Like he was not telegraphing where that kick was going to be. It was going to the body, going to the body, going to the body. And it looks the same exact way. And it goes to the head. That's a high level of skill. What does worry me with Klein is that he missed weight. You know, he missed weight by like 4 pounds. So that's a significant weight miss.
Significant.
So when you see that, it says, okay, he realized he wasn't going to make weight. It was his debut. It might have even been on short notice. But he realized that he wasn't going to make the weight, so he didn't try to. So I am interested to see how he looks when he has to try to make weight here. It could be a difficult weight cut. Then you see this guy, Mike Trezano. Klein's younger, but it's still a young guy who hasn't been in the UFC for nearly 2 years, actually just about 2 years, has his loss to Grant Dawson, which you can't fault at all, and he beat Luis Pena by split decision in 2018. That's a good look. That win has aged decently for him in his time off. I guess he was supposed to fight Rafael Alves, but that fight fell through. At these young ages, these guys make such great improvements fight camp to fight camp, which is really hard to extrapolate and like try to figure out. So I do kind of want to stay away here. As much as I really, really like Klein, and as if he looks good at weigh-ins, I may go back to like a full play, like him even being a parlay piece. But man, at 26 years old and missing weight his first time out, I don't know if I can trust him. But I mean, it should be an even level of competition between Shane Long and Mike Trezano, if not a step down. So
I think Trezano, the biggest worry for me is that a lot of that time that he spent off was due to injury. He He had knee surgery, and then when he comes back and he's supposed to have that Alves fight, he suffers an ankle injury, rolling it, stuffing a takedown in training. So it worries me a little bit that maybe he's not fully ready, and this is going to be like a, all right, I made it back in the octagon. Now, I don't think that it's smart to bet Klein by knockout here. I just think that that's a little bit...
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to bet him by knockout, so yeah. I took you off.
No, of course. Of course. But plus 225 for Klein by decision.
That's what I have. Yeah, that's what I have written down. Klein by decision plus 220 or plus 225. I think that's where the value is. I think that it goes. I don't think he gets another free KO like he did against Shane Young, unless barring some sort of other weigh-in problems. We've seen that. Trezano is tough. He hasn't been finished by KO before, only by rear naked choke by Grant Dawson, which is kind of his thing.
Yeah, I think that just about sums it up. Our straight pick is going to be Klein here, but we got to be a little careful with what we do with our money. So for right now, not going to recommend a big play, but you know, later in the week, definitely could be a parlay piece on our spreadsheet.
Well said.
In the next fight, this one I'm very much so looking forward to. Phil Hawes coming in against Kyle Daukaus, both guys with 10 wins on their record. Hawes with 2 losses, Daukaus with 1. Daukaus is going to be a little taller by 3 inches. Hawes going to have a 1-inch reach advantage, so that's a little bit negated. And both of these guys have had a little UFC experience. Both have 2 fights. And this could be a little bit of a crossroads for each of them as a prospect here and where they'll go forward. And I think the line is appropriately priced, given that Hawes is taking this on a little bit of a short notice. He was already in training camp for a fight next month against Duran Nguyen, which is kind of disrespectful.
Which he still has, which I believe is still on the docket. Yes. And is happening like win or lose, barring some sort of, I don't know, crazy medical suspension.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. So Phil Hawes at plus 110 and Daukaus at minus 137. I think that Hawes is the better wrestler, and I think that Hawes is going to be the better power striker here. I think Daukaus is going to have the cardio advantage and the grappling advantage. So
yeah,
if Daukaus can survive the first round, you know, that's a very much so a live betting opportunity. But as far as placing something pre-fight, I'm not rushing to the betting window on this one. This one is going to be, who do I think could be going forward? Last time Hawes fought, I was very happy to cash on a small decision prop with him, but I think that the market has adjusted appropriately. However, plus 450 for Phil Hawes by decision as opposed to the fight going the distance. But I still think that Daukaus has too many ways to win.
Yeah, I think you're starting to divvy up the pie maybe too much. I think if Hawes wins, it's going to be by KO. I mean, I guess we probably said that with the Imavov fight on some level, but I think that he needs a KO. I don't know that he has the output or the cardio to continue to keep up a crazy pace with Kyle Daukaus, who I believe throws more strikes per minute than he does.
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier to me, that
significantly, nearly a strike more per minute.
Yeah, and Hawes, he was falling back on his grappling and wrestling as he got a little more tired against Imavov and was getting wobbled with some big shots. I don't think Daukaus is the same level of striker as Imavov, but I know that Hawes can't rely on his wrestling and grappling against him in the later rounds, where that's agreed, where Daukaus came alive against Brendan Allen.
So the things that jumped out at me was simply fight to go the distance, plus 136. I think that's an interesting line. I don't think Daukaus gets the finish, but honestly, as I even say that, like, I already see Hawes gassing out in the second round and getting ground and pounded. Like, it's, I don't know if I want to talk about it at all.
Or plus 300 by submission.
You know, I don't know if I want to touch it at all.
None of those are, you know, attractive enough to actually make me want to place a play on a fight that could really go either way.
Yeah, so what I saw was Hawes KO and Daukaus by decision. Those are the two most likely outcomes, in my opinion. They're both plus 260. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't know. Not my favorite fight to bet. Certainly one I'm excited to watch. I believe pick-wise, I believe I'll be picking Daukus. Bet-wise, I believe I'll be staying away.
Yeah, same exact thing, same thoughts. So that brings us right along to our next fight. We got Ben Rothwell versus Felipe Lins. And
stay away, stay away, stay away. Anybody who's telling you that they have a really strong lean on this fight, I do not trust them.
that might be someone you want to refer to, like a gambler.
Or they have inside information of some sort.
Yeah, now if you know Felipe Lins is back on his PFL special sauce, then, you know, hey, maybe you want to take a knockout. Or if you know Rothwell's coming in looking to do a little bit of grappling, although Lins does have a little black belt in his pocket, and he's been afraid to use it in the UFC.
He's too small for Rothwell. I think Rothwell's is gonna beat the snot out of him. I do think it goes a decent amount of time, but I think Rothwell just gets it done. He's gonna be the bigger fighter.
Yeah.
It's really hard to, right, when Rothwell lost his last fight to Marcin Tybura, which was a relatively close unanimous decision. I mean, obviously, again, that being said, he got beaten the snot out of, but the way in which Rothwell at his age continues to will himself through fights and his fight changing power always keeps him somewhat in the fight. To me, it becomes really hard to place anything on Lins, who has just been a complete and utter disappointment since coming to the UFC.
You summed it up well with Rothwell, and he probably is the side, and that's kind of where the market's leaning at minus 118, Lins minus 106, and me. And like we said immediately when we talked about it, stay away. So,
stay away.
Yeah, so right to the main card, right? Here we are.
2-inch reach advantage for Rothwell, too. So I like that.
Yeah, that's solid. And you know he's going to be beefier. I mean, it's Big Ben.
Beefcake.
So now that brings us to the main card, right?
The best looking fight of the evening.
Yeah, we got Amanda Ribas versus Angela Hill. This, I wonder if someone had their chocolates.
Amanda Ribas back in the octagon for her first time since she was the giant apple pie shitter of one of the many apple pie shitters on that McGregor Poirier 2 card.
Oh God, talk about getting obliterated.
Yeah.
Oh no, for one, Ribas, and then for two, our bet sheets.
Oh, anyways, my God.
I digress.
But, you know, we saw Ribas in that fight kind of struggle to close the distance. And then when she had Marina on the ground, she let her back up. And then whatever it was, 5-10 seconds later, she was clipped and the fight was over. Her decision to let Marina stand back up proved to be fatal. It's interesting because we had kind of glossed over the fact that Pollyanna Viana had knocked her out in jungle fights in 2015. You're like, oh, you know, she's won a bunch of fights since then, so she's chilling. But nah, that chin got exposed. And as much as I love this girl, and I love this girl, I am very concerned about her striking, extremely concerned about her chin. It's only 4 months later, and for some reason, she's a pretty steep favorite again. Nearly minus 200 against a fighter who's extremely active and has really only lost to, in her last three losses, has only lost to Michelle Waterson, the headliner, Claudia Gadelha, a headliner, a co-headliner, almost anytime she's out, and Yan Xiaonan, who's going to be fighting very soon as the co-main event. So, yeah, I don't know. I like Hill based on the value. And there's no value on fight going the distance. There's barely any value on betting Ribas by decision. What I did find interesting was Ribas by submission was like plus 380. I think that's a little crazy since she's pretty good at jujitsu. But even Hill by decision plus 220. Is very titillating to me. Ribas by decision plus 135. I mean, yeah, that takes your minus 200 favorite into a plus situation. But I don't know. How do you feel, TB?
Yeah, I I sit here coming in, really want to hammer Angela Hill as I do every time Angela Hill fights. And
wanting to hammer Angela.
Okay, no, see, I talk about that in the money line perspective here. She's one of the more fun personalities as far as like entertainment goes. And it just seems like it's tough to trust the gas tank and her output as far as over the course of a fight. And that's kind of why we've seen some of these fights be a little bit closer than they should be, because as far as straight up talent and skill, Angela Hill in the stand-up is one of the better fighters at this point.
If the fight stays standing, if you tell me that she has a Michelle Waterson type in that performance, like defending of the takedowns, what was she, 17 of 18 defending takedowns? If you're telling me that Hill defends all Hibas's takedowns and it stays standing, I like my Hill money line. I like my Hill decision.
Yeah, so one of the factors that goes into me not wanting to really play this fight anymore is that Hibas, I feel like she definitely came in like addressing her loss the right way. Second, I do think that this is going to be a very different fight as far as the size goes. Mm-hmm. Hibas was giving up a lot of size in the last matchup, and she gave up a lot of energy in the first round holding Mahina Rodriguez down. And then as she's sitting on the stool, she looks a little bit tired, and then she gets out there in the second round and she doesn't even really go for the takedown as much. And then she's getting popped and dropped, and Herb Dean is over there catching,
I forgot that fight got stopped twice. That's so
funny. So, okay, that was definitely bad, and I'm glad that Herb stopped it after her getting like hit two more times, like once again, pretty badly. But okay, so then Hibas, she's going to be an inch taller, 1.5 inch reach advantage. She's going to be 9 years younger. She is definitely going to have a grappling advantage. And Waterson, not able to get her takedowns, she's shooting from far away, not setting stuff up. And, maybe Hibas is doing a little bit of the similar stuff. But I see it being to her advantage to have suffered that knockout and learned from it at this point against a much better opponent in the stand-up than Angela Hill, who is also much bigger than Angela Hill. So really, this is a step down in the stand-up. There's a reason why Rodriguez is fighting in the main event here.
No, I agree. One thing I just realized is super interesting. There's a 9-year age difference.
Yeah. That's
I didn't necessarily realize that.
And we're already talking about, the cardio deficiencies of Angela Hill.
I really am worried for Hibas, who's like my literal wife. Like at 27 years old, if she beats Angela Hill here, it's almost like she didn't lose that Marina Rodriguez fight. She's still going to get top. She's not going to get an easy fight from here on out if she beats Angela Hill, which at 27 years old could be a problem. It's kind of like the Jimmy Crute thing. Like if Jimmy Crute beats Anthony Smith, he's only getting difficult fights from here on out. Guess what? He didn't win that fight. So now he'll probably get the fight that he should have gotten, like a Johnny Walker-esque level fighter. I think it's very possible that Hibas is not ready for the top six of this division. I just feel like Hill's always in the fight. She's always in it. She was finished once by Random Marcos via armbar. And I guess Rose Namajunas in 2015. I mean, she just hasn't been finished in a while.
It's going to be tough. Waterson got her down, took her back, and she wasn't able to get the finish.
Even that Marcos fight that was a 2019 finish, it was still 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It was still 8 fights ago. Even though it was only 2 years ago. So, yeah, I think we've said all we can say about this one. This was a really fun fight to discuss. But
Definitely.
I think we've said all we can say.
Definitely. And we'll get into another really fun fight to discuss here. Diego Fajeda and Gregor Gillespie. A short notice matchup for both sides. Gillespie just recently got a fight postponed and canceled due to a COVID exposure for Brad Riddell. I think that this matchup might be a little bit more even as far as an all-around opponent. And we're seeing that reflected in the line where Gillespie is now only a -210 favorite. Fajeda is going to be able to offer a lot more in the grappling. He's going to have a 3-inch reach advantage. He's going to have a 2-inch height advantage. But one thing that you notice in the Dariush fight is that Fajeda is not going to have a wrestling advantage.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing Gillespie can do,
once Fajita's on his back, it's and you have somebody with good wrestling pressure on top, he really does struggle to get up. And Gregor Gillespie is one of the best in UFC history in terms of top pressure, top control.
Yeah. And I think that what could be interesting is that I heard Fajita in his last fight, they were talking in the commentary about how he was a little bit too willing to sit on his back and hunt for submissions and not try to use that to advance his position or whatever. And he actually did a little bit of a better job, like attacking a heel hook to reverse position on Dariush and doing a little something, you know, from bottom, just a normal plata, you know, a little something just to create space and actually get away from it. And then as you see in the third round, Fajita actually has a much improved performance against Dariush coming into that third round. He makes, you know, he definitely wins that round. I didn't think he won any of the other two, but you can make an argument that he stung him a little bit more early. So, you know, you get a split decision. You know, Fajita was definitely controlled 7 minutes of that fight, and he was definitely taken down every round. But in the last round, it was only one time out of five attempts.
It was that last round was much closer. I think if you're being generous or fair or whatever you want to be, I think you could go 29-28 Dariush, but otherwise I think the split decision was a little egregious.
Yeah, so along with someone else that I probably shouldn't be putting into a bet, I still want to bet Gillespie here, so I'm going to parlay him with Ludovic Klein.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do like Gillespie here. Listen, Gillespie'd have to get caught in a triangle. He'd have to get caught in a submission. That's how he loses.
Or knocked on the feet.
I don't think that he's going to get knocked on the feet.
But that's not really what's going to happen, right?
Because if you want to, what?
But I said, but that's not really what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think that, I mean, because again, I don't think it's so easy to just say, oh, Gillespie got knocked out in his last fight. He's chinny. Bro, did you see that overhand right, the head kick? That was as textbook, as perfectly executed, as clean of a strike as you could possibly throw. I mean, that was like Mortal Kombat finish him. Just unbelievable finish from Kevin Lee.
Yeah, just to like put into perspective, that's what made me bet Kevin Lee against Chucky Olives, you know? That's how impressive it was.
Yeah, I mean, it was so impressive. But to just, and he's taken plenty of time off. So to write him off as chinny now, I just think is so unfair. So I don't see Fajita having the ability to finish him on the feet. He's not a volume guy. So I don't think he's going to be in top control. I don't think he's going to have the volume of strikes from any of these positions. I don't know. I don't see how Fajita wins it. I mean, I do see it. It would be a submission or decision, but I don't think it's as likely. So I do really like Gregor Gillespie here. I think he could be a parlay piece.
Yeah, I'll put him together with Klein plus 107.
I also wrote down Gillespie by decision plus 105.
Okay.
Which like we say, you're able to take a decent chalk price and you're able to put a little plus money on it.
Yeah, I think we could see some fights go the distance here. So it sounds like we're both on Gillespie. And let's get on to
the fight to go the distance itself is minus 210. So I think it's fairly obvious where everybody thinks the fight's going to go. So if you really like Diego Fajita, I think plus 350 by decision is like a huge steal. But
I agree with that.
Yeah, but again, I that's not where I'm betting. So barring some sort of weight cut craziness.
All right. Well, hey, you want to talk some crazy submission props? Let's get into this next grease fest. Maurice Green versus Marcos Rogério de Lima. Oh, man, this one I'm not as excited for. Stay away. However, if you are a complete degenerate, boy, oh, boy, do I have the play for you.
Hit me.
All right, so you look at their records. De Lima, UFC career is 6-5. How has he lost all five of his fights? Can you tell me?
Submission.
There you go. Look at that. So very helpful assistant over here is letting us know that he's lost all five fights by submission.
That was just a good guess.
Yeah. Now Maurice Green has five submission wins in his career, two of them in the UFC. You're telling me I could get submission by Maurice Green at plus 500?
Is he really plus 500 by submission?
Yeah, that's worth a couple dollars. Listen, I'm not placing a huge bet on it. Oh yeah, on,
that's so funny. In my notes, I wrote green by finish plus 305.
Yeah, listen, I mean, a heavyweight fight, especially such a, 6'7" versus 6'1", 82-inch reach versus 75-inch reach. Anything can happen in that regard.
Yeah,
but I like the plus 500 idea, but the plus 300 for you, a finish, that's actually, a little bit more palatable in a heavyweight fight. But,
and then De Lima by finish is minus 105. I also thought that was interesting if you really loved the De Lima side. I do find myself, for some reason, on the De Lima side. I do want to pick Maurice Green. His loss against Greg Hardy isn't really that bad because Greg Hardy's a decently athletic heavyweight. But I think in that same token, can you really knock the Romanov loss? Romanov's a beast. Yeah, the forearm choke when you supposedly have a black belt is pretty – it's kind of laughable. But, like, that guy's a savage. Like, he just choked you out with his forearm. Like, he's just so – that's just so strong. He's kind of got the Marcos effect where he loves to alternate wins and losses. His wins are against nobodies, though. Clint Hester, Jeremy Kimball, Adam Wieczorek, and Ben Sassoli, who's in prison. So this Maurice Green win would be the biggest win probably of his career. So
could the same be said for Maurice Green and his career? This would be the biggest win for him.
And he beat Gian Vellante with that modified choke from the bottom, which is pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, he avenged his loss to Jeff Hughes. He's had a couple moments. Yeah.
His losses also are to big names, like we were saying. You know, Greg Hardy, Alexei Oleinik, Sasha Pavlovich, Juan Espino. Yeah, I mean, he's at a Jackson Wink now, so he's fighting with some bigger boys. And he seems to use those front kicks and the jab a little better last fight. But obviously, you know, a big guy like Hardy, it's a little tougher.
To me, yeah, this is a fight that week in and week out on the main card, at least for the last nearly 10 cards, I just can't seem to get right. So I'll have to take that as you may. I'm like 3-2 and 2-3 or 2-3 on every single main card these days. It has been a long time since a 4-1 main card for your boy.
That's all right. We'll turn it around this week.
Where did you end? Where did you end up? You ended on green just by submission with a flyer.
Yeah. Green by submission with a flyer.
Yeah, that's fair.
So in our next fight, we have Neil Magny versus Jeff Neal, the Battle of the Neals.
My pick for main event, personally.
I thought that they would both do it.
Yeah, I felt that they were both coming off of main event spots. Magny versus Chiesa and Jeff Neal versus Wonderboy Thompson. So I felt that both coming off of main event spots, that it would be interesting to have them both have a short notice main event chance for one of them to maybe turn around their main event luck, but to no avail.
You know, maybe it works out a little bit better for Jeff Neal. He just had all that pressure of being in a main event as a young man. He's still 3 years younger than Neil Magny, but it feels like Neil Magny's been in here forever. You know, Jeff Neal 5-1 in the UFC, Neil Magny 17-7. So there's definitely a big discrepancy as far as experience goes. And I think that if we see this fight start to extend and play out, Magny can maybe start dictating his pace. But I just think that Neil is going to be able to bring pressure as far as his athleticism, his power. He is going to be giving up some size and some reach, but I think he makes up for that in some athleticism. And Magny always has a height and reach advantage. But if you could work a little to his body, if you can mirror his footwork, not let him get in on you, you could definitely take a round. A lot of guys seem to shoot in on Magny. I don't know why you would want to try to wrestle him.
Yeah.
That would be a terrible idea
for Neil. If Neil tries to do that, I don't see how he would win the fight. There is something about Magny at a dog price that it's making me very, very hard to say no. As much as I may end up on Jeff Neal, this is a fight that I'm still quite undecided, unfortunately. I do have a bet, though. I do think the fight goes the distance. Fight to go the distance minus 132.
I do like that. It's a little chalky. I think Neil is really tough, and I don't think that – I'm sorry. I think both Neils are very tough. I gotta be very specific. I think Magny is very tough, and while Jeff does have that punching power, I'm not sure that he's just going to put his lights out. And in the same vein, where Magny may have a path to victory in terms of like the submission getting him to the ground, we kind of saw against Chiesa when he tried to go for his own wrestling. And again, we know how good a wrestler Chiesa is, but he wasn't the most technically sound in terms of his wrestling as much as he tries to use it. And as much as I love Magny, his low output is seriously troubling, especially possibly across a three-round fight where he may need to get his motor going sooner. I am interested to see how Neil looks psychologically after a pretty bad beatdown from Wonderboy. I mean, he got hurt in that fight, right? He had some serious injuries, no?
Yeah, I would say he definitely took a little bit of a beating, but when Wonderboy hurt his knee, you saw Neil able to still kind of show up in that fifth round and put on a decent appearance. And
that's because he's a warrior. He's a savage. So, I mean, I respect that. I mean, you look at their records. I mean, as amazing as Jeff Neil has been, I mean, his best win is the decision win over Bilal Muhammad. I think that's fair. He's got the KO loss to Kevin Holland on his record in the amateurs. And the Wonderboy loss. And then you look at Magny, beating the ghost of Robbie Lawler doesn't mean too much. I mean, his best win is probably his Li Jiang win or his really old win over Johnny Hendricks. Or even that Kelvin Gastelum win that's even older. But again, that's like ancient history. Really, really tough. I know I'm so excited for it. And I do. I think my spot is the over. I don't think I don't know if I can pick a fighter or even do it correctly. But if I had to pick right now, if the fight was right now, I guess I take Neil. I guess I take Jeff Neil. But again, Neil Magny at those dog odds, there is something exciting about that.
Yeah, I came in wanting to play Jeff Neil straight up money line and got a little spooked off it. I'd much rather say Jeff Neil by decision at plus 210 if I was going to play him.
That's nice.
I think Magny will be able to survive the storm, and I don't think he brings some of those unexpected spinning attacks or, you know, some of the explosion that a guy like Ponzinibbio brought. So
yeah, hey, or just parlay somebody like Gregor Gillespie or Tafon or, you know, one of those guys, one of the people who like, why not just to parlay that to fight goes the distance minus 132.
Not the worst of ideas as far as that goes. And you get some plus money out of it. And you don't have to pick a side in this fight. And that seems to be...
at least where I want to go. I don't know that I want to pick a side. I like... and that's the thing. I like both of these guys. I'd love to see both of these guys do well in their respective careers and get chances. They're both, I think, have exciting aspects to them.
Yeah. So that'll bring us right along to our co-main event of the evening. Once again, a very last-minute fight put together here after the Diego and Fabia fiasco. And here we are with the Great White, Alex Morono, coming in against Donald Cerrone. And, Cerrone's going to have a little bit of a height advantage, 2 inches, 1-inch reach advantage. The line here, minus 177 for Cerrone, plus 145 for Morono. Man, the money seems to be coming in here on Cerrone.
A public favorite.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys that people love going for. And yeah, I mean, what is it? How many losses in a row at this point? Because you take out, he had the no contest slash draw with Nico Price. But before that, yeah, he has 4 losses in a row. Ferguson, Gaethje, McGregor, Pettis. It's a lot of damage.
Yeah. What puts me on the dog here, and I do believe it makes Alex Morono my dog of the night play, is his level of striking efficiency. Throughout his career, Alex Morono has a much higher striking efficiency offensively and defensively, like together, than Pettis or Nico Price. And we watched Cerrone get beat down and really struggle to continue in both of those fights. I mean, again, a no contest draw and then the unanimous decision loss that maybe a lot of people said should have went the other way, whatever. What I certainly don't see is a dominant Cowboy Cerrone, like when he's, you know, finishing Fluffy Hernandez, not Fluffy Hernandez, the other Hernandez, when he's finishing Alexander the Great Hernandez, you know, when he's finishing Yancy Medeiros, that Cowboy seems long gone. And I think he was really excited to fight Diego Sanchez. And I think it's a little bit of an emotional letdown when you don't get to fight him and you get to fight a more hungry up-and-comer who won that first round against Anthony Pettis and then was unable to capitalize due to poor footwork and blitzing forward. But like I said, I think that Morono is a much better striker than, or at least more efficiently with his strikes than Nico Price or Pettis. So if you're telling me Morono is going to get hit less than those two guys and hit Cerrone more than those two guys hit Cerrone, and I get that at dog price, I'm going to take it because I can't trust Cowboy as much as I absolutely love him. I will probably be wearing my Cowboy shirt on Saturday, but I don't think I can be rooting for him in terms of that.
Yeah, I think, like you said, the volume, it adds up. We've seen Morono, you know, slightly improve his grappling game since being taken down 4 times by Max Griffin, 3 times by Jordan Mean, and 2 times by Keita Nakamura. He really hasn't given up much since, and he's had a little bit better offensive efficiency, especially since that knockout loss to Chaos Williams. I mean, I could keep going over it like you did, but like you said, dog of the night, take it away. Alex Morono, I think Cowboy's, you know, at the end of his run here. And if he proves me wrong, so be it. But
yeah, I'd be happy to see him wrong. I don't know that, even though Morono's my dog of the night, I don't know that I'm laying some huge lumber on it. Because if Cerrone loses, I don't know how they keep him. I think we've seen a lot of legends leave. And if you lose to Alex Morono in like a poor showing where he's got a swollen eye and it's bloody nose and he loses a unanimous decision, how can you bring him back for another fight or more fights? He's got to come out here and fall on his sword. He's got to come out and put on a good performance. He needs another finish win, and I just don't know that he has it in him. I'll be looking at weigh-ins. I will be looking at weigh-ins. Cerrone is somebody that we can really see how he looks at weigh-ins.
He's looked god-awful at times and looked great at times, but it's funny because some of the times he's looked god-awful, he's actually shown up and looked pretty good.
Yeah,
so
that's true. It's for him, it's all how he feels the day of the fight. When he wakes up that morning, he's like said it. Like, he woke up the morning of the McGregor fight. He like literally didn't want to fight, didn't want to be there, wanted nothing to do with it. So I think it's just about where he's at mentally.
It could also be like post-event confirmation bias. It's a lot easier to say that than to
He literally said it, but
yeah, no, I know, but you know, it's just yeah, when you're getting up to fight Conor McGregor, yeah, of course, you know, you might be a little more nervous than when you're getting up to fight Alex Morono in a co-main event.
I don't think it was nerves, at least based on what I understood. What I understood was just like a visceral not wanting to fight, not wanting to mentally be there. I've never been a fighter. I could only imagine that warrior spirit would feel like, and then what it would feel like to expect it to be there and it not to be there.
Yeah, that's a good point, and one that makes me want to steer clear more of Donald Cerrone at this stage. Yeah. I think the dad vibes have worn off, right?
Yeah. That being said, if Cerrone was plus money, I think it would make it even more difficult to like really parse how we wanted to decipher this fight. But with Morono at dog odds and money pouring in on Cerrone as a public favorite, I think I like Morono.
Amen. So now we got our main event cobbled together, right? Brought together at the last minute, saving the day.
Weird main event. Michelle Waterson, a public favorite. People really like her. I really like her, the karate hottie. And Marina Rodriguez, who's had a very up and down career, but obviously coming off the best win of her UFC career, right, against Amanda Ribas.
Yeah, and for someone to have two draws on their record tells you a lot, because she had a draw to start her career in the UFC with Randa Markos, and she had a draw a year later with Cynthia Calvillo. And you know what the common theme was? Wrestling. She loses 10-8 in a round and then comes out, puts on an absolute fucking show, styles on him on the feet, wins the next two rounds, and then walks away with a draw. So she was undefeated for a while.
And then, how about that split decision loss to Esparza, the wrestler?
Yeah, and there you go. And that's why I almost wanted to bet a draw in that fight. And look, a split decision, how close would that have been, right? Yeah, listen, Rodriguez is showing a lot of improvement off of her back as far as, you know, defending, throwing elbows, creating damage. But, you know, Watterson isn't someone that's going to be like Esparza and shoot for a heel hook and take some damage and stuff. Like, she's going for the back. But Watterson's also got to get there, and she's not the most efficient wrestler. Rodriguez has shown to be, you know, at least improving.
The problem that she's not the most efficient wrestler is that she struggles to make people pay for her striking. She's striking from miles away, so you're then telegraphing your takedown as you move in. She's got no short range striking game. Everything is long range striking.
That makes a lot of sense. She throws a lot of kicks, a lot of front kicks, karate, like we're saying, a lot of stuff that works from distance. But if you go from throwing kicks and elevating your legs to shooting forward, leaning, going for a level change and a takedown, yeah, she definitely telegraphs it. And she comes out and throws these wild combinations up top, but it's almost like, you know, old friend, who was it throwing, you know, jabs and feints from miles away?
Macy Barber.
Macy Barber, yeah. She's got a little bit of that, like, and how many times have we bet on Michelle Watterson and been like, damn, she didn't do enough? And you know what? Angela Hill brought the fight to her. She rocked her a little bit round two. She was wobbled, you know, like, oh, where am
that
I?
That was,
you
know, a crazy fight to big score bump over and to her watch.
Eye. Yeah, but then Watterson, I'll give it to her. She turns it up. Hill has her cardio issues as she normally does. Watterson lands a takedown round three, controls, but she goes 1 of 18 on her takedowns against Angela Hill. That tells you all you need to know.
You know what I did not realize again until right now? I'm like, yeah, oh, yeah. Marina Rodriguez, you know, young prospect, and, you know, Michelle Watterson, you know, this is kind of maybe her last chance. Hold the phone. Michelle Watterson, yes, 35, but Marina Rodriguez, 34? What?
Very true.
What? And she's 34. She's just as old. So while I'm wondering and worried that, oh, this could be her last ride, Michelle Watterson, you know, you lose this, there is no more climbing to the top. There is no dreams of mom champ. There is no Joanna or Carla Esparza rematch, like none of that. But that, like, with all that, she's still, Marina Rodriguez is still almost just as far at 34. A loss here to Michelle Watterson doesn't necessarily put her in a great spot.
Yeah, that I can't agree more with that. And what, the line's minus 215, short notice. The size is going to be apparent, though. Rodriguez is going to be 3 inches taller, 3 inches more of reach.
Yeah,
and wow. They're fighting at 125, so she doesn't have to cut that extra 10 pounds, bro.
So that's what I'm going to say. I would say that this is a fight that I would really, really like to pass. But
yeah,
since it's the main event and since there's not as many spots, I do think Marina Rodriguez should be able to get it done by decision, but there's no value in that. She's like minus 110 to win by decision. And like the fight to go the distance is minus 300. Maybe you just want to play Marina moneyline with the parlay. Like you want to parlay Marina and Gregor. You want to it seems like possibly a parlayable night with a couple interesting parlays, but I wouldn't go any further than Marina moneyline. I really, really wouldn't. I don't like it. It's so sketchy. It's going to be a close decision. Watterson's going to be in the fight unless she just gets dropped, which, like, has she ever been dropped? She's been choked out by Rose, choked out by Harisha Tiburico.
She has one knockout on her regional record.
Yeah.
Three submission losses and four decisions. So it's probably not the most likely, especially up a weight class, not having to cut a ton of weight. And she has been able to deal with some pressure in the past, but
I think we've said enough as much as we can on this fight. Certainly excited to watch it. I think it goes the distance. So if you want to parlay that, that's fine. If you don't want to pick a side, I think Marina should be able to win. But we've seen that in these distance fights, Michelle Waterson knows how to keep it close. So don't be surprised if it's a close, if you're, you know, if you're holding on to your ticket as tight as you can.
Yeah. So to quickly go over our plays, in case you made it this far and forgot what we were saying. So, yeah, I'll be having Tufan Chukwi at minus 132, Ryan Benoit minus 155. Klein, I'm going to put in a risky parlay, a little bit smaller money with Gillespie. And after that, we're looking at our dog of the night. We have Alex Morono plus 145. And finally, if you wanted to look at two props I was interested in, Maurice Green submission plus 500. And Jeff Neal decision was at plus 210 at last I saw.
Yeah, I think I like Marina money line. Morono's probably my dog of the day. Fight to go the distance in the Magny Neal fight. Gregor Gillespie, I like him parlay. I like him by decision. I think I like Hill, but I'd probably just stay away from that one. Hibas could be able to get it done if with a lot of top pressure. So I don't even know who I'm circling there. Hawes and Dawkins fight to go the distance plus 136. I do like Klein. I do like Klein by decision plus 220. Benoit by decision plus 170. Tufan money line, I think that's a good parlay piece. And that first fight maybe not to go the distance. But yeah, that those are all my degenerate plays, my thoughts, my feelings for UFC Vegas 26.
Yeah, so make sure you give us a follow so that you can see all of our picks and all of our thoughts as the event goes on. And to see our last second plays, because sometimes it takes us a little bit to just, you know, finalize those last plays and show you what kind of value we're putting out there. So check us out.
Yeah, thanks so much for tuning in as always. Please make sure if you're not already to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Throw a like and comment to our, some of our videos. Share them around your friends. Word of mouth means everything to us. Look for us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Really, wherever you listen to your podcast, we're on there. Make sure you subscribe so as soon as our new episodes drop, you get them right away. While you're listening, liking, subscribing, and sharing with your friends, feel free to give us a 5-star review and some feedback. We love the feedback. We love it on our Instagrams, Twitters, wherever you want to give us feedback. We are more than willing to hear it all. Please follow at Chronic Combat on Twitter for any additional updates. TB Scouting MMA on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology for my wonderful co-host. And for now, the_MMA guru is where you will find me on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week for UFC 262, Chandler versus Oliveira. Oh my goodness, am I excited for that one. See you then.